guys here, and I went into a shul before Mincha, and there was a Rosh Yeshiva giving a shiur about the issue of surrogate motherhood and egg donation. You have either the surrogate mother being not Jewish or the egg donor being not Jewish, and do you have to be concerned, or is the child Jewish? Who's the mother? And the way he presented it, it seemed like he was presenting it as if it's like some theoretical thing that happens once in a blue moon. And I was sitting there, and I'm like, this is quite common. Meaning, you know, a Beis Din that deals with gerus, at least for us, the last few years, it was like 30% of our cases. You know, it depends how you count it, because it's usually twins, so if you count it as two, then it makes up a lot of percentage. But it's quite common that you have... For fertility reasons, a woman can't carry a baby, and so she needs a surrogate to carry a fertilized egg, which is her husband's zera and her egg, or the other way around, that she doesn't have healthy enough eggs, and she has to get an egg donation from a non-Jew. And the question is, is a gerus required or not? So I want to split this here into two parts. First half we'll discuss the sugya as a whole, in terms of how you determine motherhood in this type of situation. And in the second half, I would like to discuss some of the practical issues relating to this. I mean, once you get past the point where you figure out or you don't figure out what you're supposed to do, how does this play out practically? So, obviously we don't have direct sugyas that deal with this exact case in the Gemara or in Tanakh, but we have certain precedents, and through analysis, we can come to get multiple perspectives on this issue. To start, the Tur points out, the Tur has a longer commentary, which is, the Baal Turim is printed in the Mikros Gedolos, and then the Tur has a longer commentary on the Torah, which is printed in a separate Sefer. So the Tur comments that when Dina was born, it says, V'achar Yalda Bas, meaning, for all the other Shvatim, it says Vatahar, she got pregnant, and Vatelet, and she gave birth. This one, it doesn't mention anything about the conception or the pregnancy. It just says Vachay al Dabas. So the Tur says, Lo Nemar Bahay Rayon. Why? Because there's a Met, and he quotes a Medrash. Again, this is different from our, the Gemara in Source 4 has a different version of this, but the Gemara says that Leah was up to number 7, and if she would have had a boy, then she would have had the majority of the Shvatim. And so she davened, and the boy that was in her turned into a girl, and that was Dina. The Medrash has a different version. The Medrash says that, basically, the way the Torah understands it, that Rachel was pregnant with a girl, and Dina was pregnant with a boy, and Dina davened, and the wombs switched. And that's why... Leah was pregnant with a boy, and it switched, and out came Dina came out of Leah, and Rachel came out of Yosef. And the Tur doubles down on this. This is based on the Targum Yonatan. The Tur doubles down on it. The Tur says, if you look in sources 5, 6, and 7, that later on, when they're going down to Mitzrayim, it says, B'nai Shimon, Yimuel, B'yamin, B'ov, B'yachim, B'tzar, V'shol ben Aknanis. So who's Shol ben Aknanis? So Rashi says, Shol ben Aknanis is Ben Dina, Dina's son. Why? Because Dina was assaulted by Shrem, and nobody wanted to marry her. So Shimon said, you know what, I'll take her as a wife. So the obvious question is, that's Arias, that's a brother marrying his sister, that was Usher for B'nai Noah, we already have that in Parshas Noah. The Tur says, you know, it's not such a problem. Why? Because you have to go back to the Medrash I quoted earlier. The Medrash says that who was Dina's real mother? Dina's real mother was Rachel, because she was conceived in Rachel's body. And for B'nai Noah, the Isser is only on the mother's side, not on the father's side. And since they shared, Shimon's mother was Leah, and Dina's mother was Rachel, and since they're not brother and sister on the mother's side, so Shimon was allowed to marry Dina, Shalom Al Yisrael. So that's the Tur. So the Mechas Yitzchak and others point out that here we have at least somewhat of a precedent or something to go on in terms of this issue of surrogate motherhood. Here you have Dina and Yosef, vice versa. But Dina is the subject here. Dina was conceived inside of Rachel's body, and it was Rachel's genetics, so to say. And then the fetus was transplanted into Leah, and it came out of Leah. And what does the whole discussion lead to the conclusion? That Leah is not Dina's mother. It was Rachel who's Dina's mother. So you see that
is there a time element? 40 days? Right.
I don't know if anyone makes that distinction. Meaning it's her genetic material. It's Rachel's genetic material. Yeah, it could be that there was some gestation also within Rachel, but that doesn't seem to be the point. Is that the Hayriah in itself, the conception took place by Rachel, as Rachel's gene, so to say, and we treat Rachel as the mother, according to the tour. And he quotes, so the Michlas Yisroch says there's two ways to look at it. You can say it like that, or you can say the other way, that the Torah says Dina Bas Leah. The Torah clearly identifies Dina as Leah's daughter. So you have a pasuk that goes in the opposite direction.
Also, then, Rachel, what did she say? She named him Yosef, but Yosef Hashem called Echad.
We know that Rachel treated Yosef, and we know Rachel raised Yosef, but genetically speaking, you know, according to this medrash, it was the reverse. So he writes, he quotes from the Av Basin of Lokuch that Ein Lamedin Halacha Me'Agada anyway, that we don't normally learn from Agadic. This is not your classic Ein Lamedin Me'Agados, because here, you know, the tour asked the halachic question and he gave a halachic answer. Although you can say that he was stuck, meaning the medrash is difficult to understand without this explanation, so he had to give this explanation. But so that's in, and there's a lot of room for Jewish here in terms of, I'm not going to get into it, but Yosef may have had Leah's genetics, and that might have helped him in Mitzrayim, that he was raised by Rachel, but he had certain aspects that he got from Leah. We're not going to get into that. But you see that already we have at least something to go on, not necessarily with a conclusion, but some precedent to this. The Poskim will discuss it. Beyond this, they mention him. You guys get to So you saw some of the issues here. I'm just going to present it in terms of this particular context. So there's somewhat of a stira in the Gemara. The Gemara on source 9, on Daf Yitzayin and Mabez, quotes the price of Shnei Achim Te'umim Gerim, from Lechotz V'Liyavim, Main Chayim Shumashis Achim. So you have two brothers who are twins, and they convert after they're born, so they are not Chayim Shumashis Achim. Meaning if they marry, one of them marries the other one's, the brother's wife, that's not... That's not going to be a problem. Hi, so how Rasim Shalom Kedusha doesn't Kedusha, but if they were conceived before the conversion and then they were born afterwards, then they are Chayav Mishum Eishes Ach. Okay, and the Chalitz and Yibum we're not going to get into, but the point is that they're considered Arayos one to another. That the two brothers, you know, or their wives are considered Arayos one to another, or in the same would apply to a sister. So it sounds like birth is the model here, meaning they were conceived as non-Jews. The mother converted with the twins inside, and when they're born, they're considered full-fledged siblings according to halacha. Again, Khalid said, even we're not going to get into it's more of a technicality. On the other hand, the Gemara in Source 10, in Yevamos, Ayin Zayin and Beis, no Ayin Ches, talks about Mubarish and Eskaira, whether if a woman converts while she's pregnant, whether the child needs a tefillah or not, right? Does the child require a separate conversion or not? We discussed this last time, a little bit. So,
but before they're born, you said it's okay. If they, what did you say?
If the conversion takes place after they're born, then they're not considered brother and sister of Bialah, or two brothers, not considered brother Bialah, but if the mother converts with twins while she's pregnant, then the two children who come out are considered full-fledged siblings.
But you said before that even if they're B'nai Naya, they can't marry each other.
Yeah, but that's but chayav mishumei shesach means that midoraisa they're considered full fledged siblings. Yeah, right. The rabbanon's about marrying siblings that we discussed last week, but mina Torah this means that they're full fledged siblings. So why do you need why do you need tefillah or why do you not need tefillah? And the Gemara goes on to say that the womb is not the mother is not considered a chatzitz, meaning the reason why the child doesn't need tefillah is, and again this Gemara there references, I'm sorry I don't have it, the sheet references Uber Yerachim over Super Lav Yerachim. It seems to only apply to Super Lav Yerachim. We'll get to that a little bit later, but the point is that the reason why the child doesn't need tefillah is because the woman is not considered a chatzitza, meaning that the tefillah itself is good to be megayer the child. And you have the Ramban Shita, the Ramban's famous Shita, that the child would need a milah l'shem geirus after the first, meaning that the tefillah is a, and even the other Rishonim disagree, seem to agree that the tefillah is something significant, not all of them, but seems to be the consensus, at least in how to learn this sugya. So on the one hand, source 9 tells you that the woman who converts, the two kids are considered brother and sister, or brother and brother, which sounds like they're not gerim, that all you need is to come out, like we're taught in first grade, if you're born from a Jewish mother, you're Jewish. So the woman converted when she's pregnant, she had twins afterwards, born to a Jewish mother, you're Jewish, right? No conversion necessary. On the flip side, source 10 seems to say that B'nah, tzarech tefillah, meaning he needs a tefillah, just that he doesn't need a separate tefillah, but the tefillah that the mother undergoes is the tefillah shem geirus. Sounds like there is a conversion taking place. So how do you resolve this apparent contradiction? Is there a conversion going on, or is there not a conversion going on? And if there is a conversion going on, which source 10 indicates, why are the two brothers considered halachic brothers? Don't we have a rule, gershon is guy, chatzon ol adami, that their connection to one another should separate by virtue of the fact that they're both gerim, and gerim don't have a relationship.
Even if she conceived while she was pregnant. I mean, even if she went to gerus after she became pregnant.
Well, that's the question. Meaning, the source 9 says that she was megayer, and then megayer while pregnant, that they're brothers, and we do not say gershon is gerim kachshol adami, but at the same time, source 10 says that you need a tefillah. So it sounds like there's a conversion. So if there's a conversion, why doesn't Gershon Hizkaya take place? And if there's no conversion, why do you need a tefillah? So there are four different approaches to this, and the four different approaches will all shed light on the surrogate mother, surrogate motherhood situation. So the first approach is that really you need a tefillah. A woman converts when she's pregnant, she has to undergo a tefillah in order to convert the child. Why are the two brothers who come out after considered full-fledged brothers? That's based more on a technicality in Gershon Hizkaya. And you can go with this in a number of different ways. Rav Chaim Ozer says that Gershon Hizkaya doesn't apply when the mother's Jewish. Okay, that's, I guess, a more basic way of saying it. Gershon Hizkaya applies to the regular gerim doesn't apply when the mother's Jewish. Shmuel Rozovsky says that according to the opinion of Uber Lavir Emo, the gerus is considered one act of gerus, meaning the mother went into the mikvah and her and her two twin fetuses all were megayer at the same time. So therefore, you don't apply Gershon Hizkaya. Rav Schechter develops this a little bit further. There's a question. Question about why Gershon Hizkaya didn't apply at Mount Torah. Why don't we say it was a gerus of Klal Yisrael, and seemingly, with the exception of the Meshech Chachma, it seems that everyone agrees that they were all related, right? We're still related to Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov even after the conversion of Matan Torah. So why is that? So Rav Schechter quotes in the Rav that Gershon Hizkaya, the reason why normally lose the relationship between siblings during conversion is because you can't have a relationship that's severed and then repaired. Meaning, so you have, let's say, a family comes to the mikvah to do a conversion. So the father goes in. Now he's not related to the rest of the family. So then when his kid goes into the mikvah 5 minutes later, you can't put that back together again. Once you lost the relationship, you lost the relationship. And even if you try to tovel all of them at the same time, it's impossible that each one of them is going to go, you know, below the water at the exact same moment. I mean, technically it is possible. You need a bezin, at least according to some show, you can have a bezin to turn around and then all face the mikvah. Or you can make the mikvah kosher at the same time. There are ways to do it, but generally speaking, the tefillahs take place at separate times, and therefore the relationship is severed and it's gone forever. But if somehow you can make all of them simultaneous to the exact same moment, then Gershon and Hizkiah would not apply. So how do you have that? In this one case where the woman goes into the mikvah and the ugrim, the fetuses, are all total all at the same time through the same conversion, so then you don't apply Gershon and Hizkiah Kadoshinol Adami because the relationship was never severed. And as such, the primary sugya in terms of resolving the meaning, source 10 is the main source, that a woman who converts when she's pregnant, the child does need to undergo a tefillah. And source 9 is more of a technicality. The reason why they're considered brothers is more of a quirk in the principle of Gershon Hizkiah Kadoshinol Adami. Okay, so that's one approach. The second approach is that you follow birth as the determinant. Right, this is Rav Itzel Panovitcher in Zefer Yitzchok, source 14, and Rav Notelli Trup in source 15. Both say that that even if you didn't have a conversion, if it didn't work for the fetus, The child will be chayav in mitzvahs, and the reason why he needs a tefillah is to somehow either, you know, the way the Zecher Yitzchak says is to remove his non-Jewish roots, or the way Naftali Trup to bring him into Kedushas Yisrael. But the chayav mitzvahs is totally on being born to a Jewish mother, and so you need the tefillah to get rid of certain aspects of the non-Jewishness that existed from the fact that he was conceived as a non-Jew. But really, the main thing is the fact that he's born to a Jewish mother, so if the mother converts while pregnant, the child that comes out will be chayav in mitzvahs, and that would explain why they're considered brother and sister, and we don't apply Gershon Hizkiah. That's the second approach. The third approach is Adni Miluim, or Ayilim Heller, and he says that it depends on Uber Yerachim or Uber Lav Yerachim, meaning the sugya in source 10 already referenced that. And says machlokas, just to uber yerachimo, means that the fetus is a limb of the mother, and uber lav yerachimo means that it's not a limb of the mother. Somebody recently was asking me about what the best way to get to a hospital, for a pregnant woman to get to the hospital on Shabbos. She was giving a shiur on whether Uber is better or home is better. I told him she told the shiur uber yerachimo. Anyway, so he says that the whole sugya is contingent on those two sheets, and then you can read the sugya on Sadi Zion in the same way, meaning that the fact that there's a stira between source number 9 and source number 10 is not such a problem, because we already have, you know, in the Tanaim, these two opinions, whether Uber Yerachim or Uber Lav Yerachim. So the fact that they contradict each other is not such a problem.
You can't really mix in Matan Torah, because Moshe was a lady from Shevet Levi, and that didn't get cut off.
Yeah, we generally assume that there's a lot of proofs that we say in Davening, okay, I don't know, they took the Leviado.
It comes from this Shevet, it comes from that Shevet. We call it property.
Yeah, yeah, we generally assume that it was not cut off. Okay, so that's... And then you have to figure out whether we hold Uber Yerachim or Uber Lav Yerachim. The fourth approach is the Dvar Avram. The Dvar Avram says that you can have a hybrid. We have, in Halakha, we have sometimes concepts where you have elements of both. You know, the Rav like to say Bein HaShmashos, so it's not a Safek Yom, Safek Laila, but it has elements of Yom, elements of Laila. You have a Kvi or a Koi, depending on who would be, as a little discussion how to pronounce that. But, you know, there are some who follow the approach that that it's not a Safek Behema, Safek Chaya, but it has elements of both. And there are other examples of this. So the Dvar Avram says that if a woman converts when she's pregnant, so the part that developed as a non-Jew would be not Jewish, and the part that developed as a Jew would be Jewish. And the reason why, and this is the important point, because it has, it's going to be very nogel ma'isim. The reason why that chayav mishum eishes ach is because they are considered brothers from the moment of the conversion of the mother. So yeah, there's part of them that's not Jewish, and they would need a tefillah for that. That aspect of it, but they're chayav mishum eishes ach because they had even if they had a little bit of development, so that creates that brotherhood that
tefillah doesn't do anything. It's just that it has to be done.
Yeah, but it's more than that. It says if you didn't do anything, if you didn't have the tefillah, so then it would have elements of both in it. Enough to make a chayav mishum eishes ach, but at the same time, you would need a tefillah for the other. It's not even a part. It's not like there's an arm that's not Jewish and the other arm is Jewish.
Yeah, it's something it just, that has to be
it's
done.
All mixed together.
That's the combination.
Right, right. So, as a matter of halacha l'maisa, if you look in source 18 and 19, Zalman Lechemi Goldberg follows the approach. He was, I think, the first one to really. Get into this in Truman Volume 5. So he assumes that you follow the birth. He follows that approach that whoever the baby comes out of is the mother of the halacha, and if that woman is Jewish, good. If not, then the baby's not Jewish. Shlomo Zalman was Mesukah. He said you don't really have such strong proofs either. You know, even with these sugyas. It's not an ironclad proof, and so you treat the matter as a suffix. I don't have it here, but Yashiv, I think, holds without a doubt that you follow the conception, meaning whoever gave the genetic material is the mother. And then Rav Sternbach seems to follow the Dvar Avraham. So he says that it has elements of both. So now we'll kind of segue this into the second half. So some, but they didn't. Will follow a specific approach. I'll say either we follow the egg donor, or we'll follow the surrogate. And many feel that even Rav Zalman Lechemia in Truman Volume, I think it was Volume 10. So he was asked about this, and he said, look, you know, I have my shita, but you don't want somebody growing up and then, you know, when it's time to get married, finding out that, you know, that you're not Jewish according to Rabbi Yashin or whatever. So he recommends, being kosher for both sides. And I think that every bezin will assume that's a prudent approach. But the nafkaminas might be in how you approach it.
So you won't take one to be an eight for the other one's custom.
Well, yeah, that for sure. But that miman of shach, I think. Well, let's talk about the miman of shach situation. So let's say you do the gear and you call it a gear misafel, right? Let's assume that when truth is a suffer. Okay, so let's say it was a girl. Can this girl marry a kohen? So Pasha says, no, it's a suffix. Whether it was an egg donor or a surrogate, according to some shitas, it's a suffix, yoros a kohen. She can't marry a kohen. But let's say the kohen was in the exact same situation, meaning the father was a kohen, and he did the same process that this woman that he wants to marry underwent. So do you say, Mimanoshach, that the child Kohen is either a Kohen and the girl is not a Gioras, or the child is not a Kohen because he had to undergo a Gior, and therefore he's allowed to marry a Gioras. So you should say yes, unless you throw in the Dvar Avram. Because according to the Dvar Avram, it's Ma'urav Mishneim. It's a mix of two. So you're not going to get around that issue. Another area where this might play out is the following. So what do you do in terms of the bris? So here's where it gets... I'm getting a little practical here, but you know, people don't generally want to advertise what happened. So if it was a surrogate, so everyone knows that the woman was never pregnant, and now she walks in the next day with a baby. But the other way around, you don't necessarily have to tell people that it was an egg donor that was used. And so they want to have a bris. They want to have a bris. And the nusach for a bris for a Yisrael is different than the nusach for a bris for a ger. So the alamila is not such an issue. You know, you normally for a ger you say lomalas a ger. I don't think that's much of an issue to say alamila. The second bracha lehachnisa bris hashanah avinu that you can't say to suffix. You know, but that you could kind of hide. You know, like his father, he fumbles around. He didn't find the place. You know. But then the third bracha, that is, I'm not sure how you could say that one either, because for Yisrael, the bracha is, Asher Kideshi did me bad, then the Chokoshe Rosam, right? When he was Mekadesh Yedid, who's the Yedid? So Rashi says the Yedid, this is on Kuflam Zayim Mubez, in Shabbos, Rashi says the Yedid is Yitzchak. So he's Mekadesh Yitzchak, Mibetan, meaning it's talking about Yitzchak being the first person who was chayav in Mila, and it's a different kind of Mila than the Mila of a ger. And the bracha for a ger is, you know, there is a bracha which you say with the board for a gafen, but it has a different nusach. Mevarchem Hashegar Shem Zav Zon Lamolos Agerim. Latif mayhem dam brishel mali dam brishel on his kaim with Shemayim v'arat shenemar lo brisim v'alayel kukul Shemayim v'arat zol samti v'ruchat Hashem k'reis v'bris. The chasima is the same in both brachas, so, and the nigun probably is the same, but the tofen of the bracha, the rest of it, is not the same. So Rabbeinu Tam says that the yedid is Avraham Avinu. So maybe, you know, this is more on derech drush. You could say that there's some shaykhus of a gear to this Asher Kadesh Yedid Mibetan, but Pashtus is that they're two separate prophets. It's hard, if you're going to treat it as an actual suffix, then we cannot say that prophet. Now, if you follow Rav Sternbach, the Dvar Avram, the kid is for sure Chayiv and Amila Yisrael, L'Shem Mila. He might also be Chayiv and Amila L'Shem Geirus as well, but at least yeah, you definitely would have made, yeah. No, but I'm saying minimal. If he's chayav b'shem eishes ah, and if you're going to hold it, he's chayav b'shem eishes ah. I think you kill somebody who, you know, chayav b'sa would be on the same level as some brachos l'hakel minimally. So.
I'm wondering about pidyon aven. If you're going to have a big subject on pidyon aven, chlav.
Yeah, pidyon aven.
Is it this woman or that one? Is it Rachel Aleya?
No, either it came out of a non-Jewish woman. That's for sure not a peder aven. Came out of the Jewish woman.
No, so from Rachel, it would be a big in a ben. If it was from Leah, it wouldn't be.
Here the question is, you have a surrogate mother. So if the surrogate mother is the woman who's going to raise the child, so to say, she's the Jewish person. So I don't know, the Gemara on Zion and what Mitzayim before was talks about the Beresh and his character the opinion of Ben. So I think the same would apply here, even if, I mean, I guess if the kid's not Jewish, he wouldn't do opinion of Ben. Yeah. And then if you hold, like Rav Sternbach or the Dvar Avram, you could even argue that maybe the Bracha of Lachniso is Shayach because the kid is Chai than Mila. You could even argue that you would do a Mila and Yom Shemini for Shabbos if you follow that approach. Yes, there's a quirk here though. Rabbeinu Chanana on Chanigah and Dr. Zion, he talks about the Sabbath of Ambati, which is the kind of the model for artificial insemination, Rabbeinu Hananel says that maybe the mother is not tmeya later. So Rav Shlomo Zalman thinks that if you have any type of artificial reproductive technology, maybe you shouldn't do a meal on Shabbos altogether for a for that situation.
But it's so, a suffering.
No matter what, there was artificial insemination, and there was something artificial going on. So Rav Shlomo Zalman. The Moalim don't really ask this question. But it is something to know that Rav Shlomo Zalman holds like this. Now the last question, and I think this is a very relevant question. I would say more so in Eretz Yisrael than it is here. And that's the following. You have this couple, they come and they say, look, you know, we got an egg donor from wherever, a non-Jewish egg donor, or we use a surrogate. It's very common in Israel for people to go to Georgia, not the state, but the country, and it's cheap. And there are, you can look online, there are institutions that have a doctor based in Israel and a doctor based in Georgia, and they work the whole thing out. And, you know, it's not that far. You fly there, you do it at the beginning, and then pick up the baby at the end, visit whatever it is, and so if they're a frug couple, so conversion is easy. That we know. That's a good here, cousin, but really not so that's best. Source 22. But what if they're not up to the normal standards? That if they were to come here and they were adopting a child, we would say, you know what? It's better to leave this alone. Or if it was an intermarried couple, we'd say, you know, when you're more along the way and you're more rooted in your Judaism and you're ready that everyone in the family is going to be Jewish, then you can convert the child. But before then, you know, I think we're better off holding out. But what about this situation where it's a suffix? You have a child and it depends on the level of observance. Meaning, let's say in America, somebody who's totally no affiliation to anything, they're not going to come and ask for this anyway. It's the people who have some connection to Judaism. They want their kid to go to get into an Orthodox school. But they're not, you know, they're keeping kosher in the house, not out of the house. They keep Shabbos, but they use their phones. Or, you know, we can go through a whole list of all the different issues. And in Eretz Yisrael, it's a different set of questions. Because there, everyone needs to register as a Jew. And so there's pressure from a bureaucratic perspective to make sure that the child is registered as Jewish or he's never going to be able to get married later on in life. So do we say that because, I mean, it's a suffix, either because of surrogacy or because of egg donor, that we should kind of bend the standards a little, because if you don't bend the standards, then the kid is going to be stuck in this state of limbo, and he's going to be growing up in a Jewish household. Everyone's going to assume that he's Jewish. So maybe it's better to just, you know, make the kid Jewish and instead of putting him in a state of limbo. So I don't really have... The only discussion I saw about this, Rav Ezra Vick wrote in Asya, Hey, he didn't really have any sources. He raised this question and he said, you know, it's probably better to do the gear. I just wanted to kind of throw out a few suggestions here in terms of maybe there are some marmakomos related to this. Again, this is not meant as a Lamaisa discussion. I just some thoughts. So there's machlokas between in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim about whether you can be mezaka and get shifter to an Eved Kanani. Can you act on his behalf and take this Eved Kanani, right? The non-Jewish, who is not totally non-Jewish, maybe he'll be Jewish when he's freed. Document of freedom on his behalf. So some say yes, because it's discussed. There's nothing, right? We have a clause up and shall be front of you. You can benefit somebody on their behalf, and there's no downside to it. There's no downside to it here, so why not take it on his behalf? And Rabbi Meir disagrees. And Rabbi Meir, the Mishnah says, because if it's an Eved of a Kohen, now he can't eat Truma anymore. The Gemara, I should say, Yud Gimel, the Gemara says that even if the Eved is not of a Kohen, he's of Yisrael, but he was permitted to marry a Shifcha, and now when you get to get Shifcha for him, now he can't marry a Shifcha. And the Gemara says, and explain Rabbi Meir, Avda behefkeira nichale, zile shifale priest. The Eved would rather have the freedom of marrying a shifa than to be prohibited to a shifa. And Chachamim say, well, we'll see what they say. Okay, so that's the machlokas of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. So the Gemara of Suvis brings this up in the context of a ger katan. And the Gemara says that maybe, right, for a katan, we say it's a s'chos d'achna l'adam shel b'fanav. Don't we know that already? Not the same. You might say, "Ovi b'chavim bev keir nichle." How do you know this? Because kaimelon eved v'adai bev keir nichle. Right? Because an eved likes to have the keiros. Amash b'lon hanimili gadol the tam tam yisrael katan s'chuslo. So gadol likes to have keirus, but a katan does not. So the Rishonim ask, what do you mean, Eved Vaday Bev Keir Nichla? We just said that according to Chachamim, the whole reason for Rabbi Meir is because Eved is Bev Keir Nichla. What about the Chachamim? It seems not that way. So Tosu says that there's a difference. In the case of an Eved, meaning the idea of a non-Jew being Nichla Bev Keir, that everybody agrees to. But when you're dealing with an Eved, you're weighing the fact that he's going free against the fact that he's losing his ability to marry a Shifcha, so that he would prefer to go free. And the Rashba has a similar idea. If you look at the middle by footnote 601, meaning you have two things going in your favor. He's now allowed to, he's now going free, and he can marry somebody who's not a servant. But normally a goy bev keir nichle. Okay. So, what about, according to Rabbi Meir, the Odri Yehuda talks about this. According to Rabbi Meir, he took the hefkeirus off the table. When Rabbi Meir agreed that he could be mezakeh to it. So the Navi Yehuda in Navi Tinyana Simon Evan Ezra Simon Kuf Yud says Rabbi Meir agrees that, let's say, you have a Chatzi Evan Chatzi Ben Chorin. He's half. He's stuck in limbo. So he can't marry a Shifcha. He can't marry a Bas. He can't marry a Bas Chorin. He's stuck in limbo. So what does he do? So even Rabbi Meir would agree that you can be Mizakeh, they get Shifcha to him because he doesn't have any other choice. So is that a proof to our situation where you have this kid who's stuck in limbo? So not exactly, because we have no indication in any of these sugyas that the Eved Kanani is planning on defying the Torah. Meaning it seems that, you know, even if you say Eved Behefkeva Nichale, it sounds like he's, if it was Mamish Hefker, meaning he was living a life of Hefkeros, then what would he care if you freed him and he can't marry a Shifcha? He'll do what he wants to do. It sounds like he's following, he's observing whatever
the mistress of a woman.
Right, whether he, no, I'm saying, it doesn't sound like he's living a life where he's not observing. Whether it's by choice or by force, he's following the Torah. Just that he would prefer to have a Torah life that allows him to marry a Shifcha versus the other way around. Whereas in this case, you have a kid who's going to grow up eating trade, and doing whatever he does on Shabbos, so maybe it's better that he's not Jewish and only chayav and all these things be suffering than to be chayav in Torah's vada. Now again, here's where you bring in the Dvar Avraham and Shermah, that if the chayav b'shem eishasah in the case of the shnei teumim, then maybe he would be chayav anyway. Maybe he'd be chayav anyway for violating Shabbos, according to that svara, because he's Ma'urav, he has Yisrael blood in him, so to say, and he just has to get rid of the other aspect of it, but he's chayav he's kind of the mitzvahs fully to the point where we would say chayv shemei shesach. So so that consideration might be relevant. There is a Rashba. So the Rashba in Kiddushin, this is for its own shiur. He has a cryptic comment where he basically says that that the Eved being Meshuchar is a schus gomor. Why? Because if you look about two-thirds of the way down, get Shichur is a schus gomor who dematiru vaskorin umachniso lechlal mitzvos to Yisrael. So even if he's screaming and saying, I don't want the shichur, but because we're bringing him into mitzvos and we're freeing him into schus gomor. Now it seems kind of odd that you have on the one hand Rabbanan hold that it's a schus gomor, meaning it's an absolute schus. And if you went through the Ger Kodesh, the schus gomor might be a higher level than regular schus, and maybe you can't be mocha according to the Semer Shonim. So it seems a little odd that on the one hand, Schus Gomor is Rabbanan holds Schus Gomor, and then Rabbi Meir holds the Chol. Usually, when you have Machlokas, it's not such an extreme Machlokas. So I think the Rashba, if you read the end of the Rashba, where he says Hafa Shani, the Ilu Isa Le'Eved. Meaning, if the Eved was standing here, we would force him to take it. So even if he's not here, so it's as if we could force him to take it, we could force somebody else to take it on his behalf. So I think what the Rashba was saying is a problem. For Rabbi Meir, when we try to gauge what a schus is, it's very subjective. Meaning, what does the Eved want? Does he want the bas chorin? Does he not want the bas chorin? Does he want to be repeated? Does he not want to be repeated? Whereas for Rabbanan, we take in other objective standards. The fact that he's chayav mitzvahs, the fact that he's mutar b'asmar. Obviously, we also have to factor in his personal opinion, but his personal opinion is only part of a larger picture. And so since we make the determination without him that we can force him to take it, so we can look at it objectively as a schus gomor, meaning there is no gray area the way the Rashi was presenting it. It's either it's a chol, because Rabbi Meir holds that it's subjective, or it's objectively a zechus. And so now we have to figure out if we're going to go with that route. So what happens, can we for a ger katan, or these types of situations, can we say that the Beis Din's perspective also shapes what's a zechus and what's not? So in terms of being Megayer a Ger Katan, and somebody, a Ger Katan specifically, who's not Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. So we have two general approaches to why we can't do that. Rav Cook and others say that you just can't, and this depends on whether of a Vila Bezdin, this is, I'm sure you will get to this point. So Rav Cook says that basically the parents who bring the child to a Bezdin, they're the ones who are doing his Kabbalah's mitzvahs for him. And if they're not going to observe mitzvahs, there's no geirus. You can't do a geirus for somebody in that situation. Others say that it's not a schus to put a child in a situation where he's going to end up growing up being an afrum. That's not a schus, that's a chov. And the best then is the one who's going to determine whether it's in his best interest or not. According to the first approach, there's nothing really you can do. Meaning if you need Kabbalah's mitzvahs from the family that's going to raise him. So you could scream from today to tomorrow, the kid's going to be in limbo, but okay, you need Kabbalah's mitzvahs, and if there's no Kabbalah's mitzvahs, then you could do. Whereas, if it's really totally on schus, so then there's more leeway. Rav Moshe seems to, even though Rav Moshe doesn't allow conversions if the child's not going to grow up from, but Rav Moshe at least was mesupuk about this. In one of his tshuvas, he writes that, you know, if a child converts when he's a kid, maybe he should do the geirus again when he's older and he's frumer, because, you know, in America, this is obviously an earlier, America is a total hefkerus, and we all know that the kid, you know, at the time of the conversion, it wasn't a real conversion, they weren't planning on raising him frum. Then later on, he says, Igam Adas Bezin was supposed to have, because they're learning in a Jewish school with, again, this obviously depends if they're going to go to a yeshiva, but they'll start to be Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, and even though you're not sure what's going to happen, it's a Schus Vadai, and even if they don't end up being Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, Mestavish is Schus Tereshi Yisrael, Sheishan Kiddush Yisrael, is better than, meaning even a Rosh Yisrael is better than somebody who's not. So Rav Moshe takes what's probably the most lenient approach within the Shita of Sfos, but at least, you know, if you're going to say that there's Liwa within Sfos, you can argue that year two, the child, he can't get married according to Halacha to anybody, meaning if you're going to treat it as a Suffolk, so maybe you can do a conversion between Gavna. One more sugya to examine. The Gemara Ksuvos on Daf Tezvav talks about a Tinok Hamushla. You find a kid in the street, you don't know where he came from. So if his town is Rov Yisrael, so then you assume he's Jewish. If the town is Rov non-Jews, so you assume he's not Jewish. Matzah. If it's a 50-50 town, so then you treat him as a Suffolk. And the Gemara goes through all the various nafkamina in terms of what, you know, for legabe what. So, what?
Like a
what? Yeah, we discussed this in the first year a little bit. So the question is, why don't you just do a tefillah and solve all these problems? So the Rashba asks this question. Vim Tomar, towards the end, and cannot belinu al das bezin. The Yishlom Marka Shiyad, almost all the tefillahs, and many don't. Not every generation were they allowed to do a gear. So kid is registered as a non-Jew in the whatever government you're in, and they won't let him do a gerus. That's it. Ina, I mean, shlomer da'avad dina tanan lomer kishlovi b'lulu dinavi. Or it's basically the same answer. Whatever, they didn't do a tefillah, and so this is halacha. They didn't do the tefillah, so either way, it's the same thing. Now, shita megubetches is a third answer. Ina, I mean, tavli adas besim yuchal limchos begadlo v'emor yisrael gamur. So if you told him that's best, then we're concerned that he's going to be mocha when he's older, and he's allowed to reject it, and people will think that he's a full-fledged Yisrael. So you see, on the one hand, we have this concern that people will think he's a Yisrael. That's a mitigating factor on the one hand. On the other hand, we see that he can be mocha when he's a godel. How can he be mocha when he's a godel? He's a suffic Yisrael, suffic Akim. What is he mocha? Meaning, it sounds like, according to the Shita Mikubetzes, you cannot force him into a situation. I mean, you shouldn't proactively do it, because if we had an obligation to be tovel him l'shem geirus to get out of the whole suffolk, then he wouldn't be allowed to be mocha. How could he be mocha? So the fact that he could be mocha sounds like we can't. Now the fact that the Rashba leaves out that Terence says something. Why didn't the Rashba bring this up? Okay, I don't know. But the Shita also sheds light on this issue. And then the last point, the Rambam calls this Tino Kamushal Kana Sufi, which means that he can't get married. We discussed this in the first year, that we don't know who his parents are. He might be a mamzer, he might be this, might be that. So the halacha is, means Rabbanan, and he's not going to get married. So the Rambam says in halacha chavah, right, that he will be considered an Asufi, but he'll be Jewish. So the Or Sameach says that if you look in the middle, I'm the Mahadimah Bilan also Lashem Gairus Faras Rabbeinu, the Avagab the Chol's man, the lowest guy, are near the Mutter Lisa Nafris, Moshe Mutter Lech on the Velos. If he doesn't undergo a Gairus, so he can marry a non-Jew, and he's allowed to eat the veils. This is when it's Rov Akum. Lo shayat Jutsun gavi deilis avukavim. Him kenim yigayrei horei ye oser ove kokavim uvas Yisrael v'yem lukrof lisa dioris. Meaning the Rambam considers him an Asufi. So what's he better off doing? He's better off not converting, because right now he can marry anybody. If he converts, he can't marry anyone except the dioris. So he says, but calls this of Rabbeinu came into a mushaf bashuk of a robe of the kavim of the epilulu the gerus mitzvah. So there are some some benefits to being Jewish, but it's a chiddush. At least there are some asking. It's a chiddush to say that you could be megayer, which sounds like that the ability to get married is the primary factor here, as opposed to the observance of mitzvos. And here the benefit that he's saying is that they'll come save him.
But it also sounds like he doesn't have to go through anything except the tefillah, and he's a perfect Jew.
No, I think that means that if it's a male, that he has to go through the tefillah. The Rambam elsewhere talks about the idea that he could be that if somebody bought an Oveg Lekovim and was told him L'shem Geirus, so the din is that he's Jewish, and Rosh Sternbach writes that doesn't have the din of a Geir Kovim. That's a separate halacha. If you buy somebody, or you find him on the street and you take him, so then that has a separate halacha. That's also relevant here, because you could argue that surrogacy, if it's not the mother, so where did they get the kid from? They bought him basically with a contract.
But he's not mobile.
No, you have to do the mila. But I'm saying if you follow that approach, I don't think we assume like that for adoption. That would solve all the adoption problems. Sherbov says that it's a separate din and it's not based on Ger Katan.
Once you make him an Evet, he's already chayiv in the mitzvahs of the world. Once he's already a half a Jew, then you can be in
Shem. No, not L'shem Evet. Rav Moshe discusses that in adoption. Maybe you could make him an Evet Kanani to get around the problem of but I don't think we generally. I don't know how far you take that Rambam about finding, because then surrogacy, you could argue that he paid for the child, that's like a togebet, worst case scenario, if the kid's not Jewish, so you bought an Akum and a Shuk. But I don't know. So just to summarize, in the first half of this year we discussed surrogate motherhood and egg donor. Four shitas in the Akronim. Had a result of seer, either that it follows a birth, or it follows a conception, or that it depends on uber yerachim or uber lav yerachim, or that it's kind of a hybrid of both. And we discussed, based on that, what do you do now that people come and ask these questions? What do you do about the bris mila in terms of the brachos? What do you do about the Yisrael Kohen, whether it's an afamina, it follows the Avraham or Shembach? And we discussed what if they're not up to standards, can you bend the standards a little bit? And again, it could be of varying degrees. It could be that if they're totally not prum at all, then that's different than if they're most of the way there. Maybe we wouldn't take them if it was a regular adoption case, but here, because it's a suffix, so there are varying degrees in this, and the best, part of the job is to determine how much of a supposed it is in this particular situation. And is the fact that the person is in limbo, is that one of the factors in determining whether it's a zechus or not?